on the Book of Ruth. So this is our third installation of the Mary Hankin Dumont University here at Anshei Sephard Beth Lomith Congregation. And we've been talking about the Book of Ruth. There are four chapters. We have four lectures. This is the third one. And we're going to see we'll start to see patterns and relationships between the different chapters. So here we go. I'm going to share this document with you, which I've prepared. And through this document, we will see both the verses and questions about the verses that can help us as well. I'm going to spot my flashlight, my video, so you can see me as we're talking. So you're welcome to ask questions, interrupt, answer questions, whatever you'd like. So here we go with the third chapter. It's a fascinating parallel between the second chapter and the third chapter. One of the questions we asked beginning at the outset, we'll ask it again tonight, is who is the star of the show here? Is it the Book of Ruth, or is it really about Naomi? Which comes in two forms. I was talking to Bloom about this. One form of who's the star of the show is, you know, who gets the most attention, who's your favorite character, who is portrayed most favorably, who's the hero in the sense of being a great person. There's another sense, which is a story, usually there's a problem, and the story solves the problem. And the question is, whose problem does this book solve? And that's going to be a very important question tonight. So what's interesting is, the beginning of the second chapter began with Ruth. She's a young lady. She came to a country. She's starving. She says, hey, let me go out and see if I can find a guy who will give me some food. And Naomi says, yeah, lachibiti, go ahead. What do I care? No, Naomi was very passive. She was depressed. In this chapter, we're going to see Vatomer la Naomi chamota. It opens up with Naomi taking initiative that basically there should be some sort of proposal, seduction, something with Boaz. This chapter is all about Naomi's idea. Again, the last chapter was about Ruth's idea to go out and collect. And she came home and she told her mother-in-law. Then her mother-in-law woke up and said, well, that's great. God is good. Boaz is good. Everything will be great. And this chapter is about how Naomi takes initiative and Ruth follows. Now, the question is, to what extent does Ruth follow or does Ruth hone her own path? So that's going to be another question. Our overall question for tonight was, and it's a seductive question to get people to come, and that is seduction or kindness, seduction or mercy. Are we going to witness tonight a sort of a love story, sort of a PG-13 kind of a story, seduction of some sort of Ruth to Boaz, or maybe Ruth and Naomi to Boaz, or is it something else, which we'll have to name later? So let's start. Vatomer la Naomi chamota. So Naomi, her mother-in-law, refers to her as a mother-in-law. My daughter, BT. Everyone's talking so patronizingly to Ruth. Everyone's older. She's younger. They all call her my daughter. Of course, it's very nice for mother-in-law to refer to her daughter-in-law as a mother, as a daughter. Halo avakesh lach manoach, I show you tell that. After all, shouldn't I must, you could translate, shouldn't I seek for you a resting place for you, which would be good for you? What is he referring to? Anybody?
Gets married and has a stable home, she'll have a place for Naomi.
Good. So she wants to find her a more permanent place. Until now, we had food security, but we have housing and marriage insecurity. But she wants to find her more home security. So let's look at a few questions. How is Naomi functioning here? What role is she playing?
The shotgun.
Okay, so she's a shotgun. And is that an appropriate role for the mother-in-law of a deceased son? What do you think?
Not really. Yeah.
Well, it's not that she clarified she doesn't have any sons. So it's not like she has no other way to provide for Ruth.
Right. Right. She said in the first chapter, hey, don't leave me alone. I can't provide you a husband. I don't have any children. But now she's saying, wait a second. I could provide you. I have an idea. I have a shidduch. And mother-in-law, so it's a little tricky. On the one hand, we said, what a wonderful thing. If a mother-in-law says, I don't want you to wallow in your widowhood and remember my husband until you're in the grave, but I want you to find a new life. It's a very generous thing. On the other hand, if you believe that by the widow marrying certain people, it could reincarnate the deceased, then whose bidding does Naomi want Ruth to do? Let me ask that another way. If Naomi is thinking, well, if she would marry someone from the family, then that would, the child would count as a replication or a replacement of my deceased husband / son, then whose job is Ruth asked to do?
Matchmaker.
You mean Ruth or Naomi?
That when Naomi says, go find a, well, let me help you go find a husband, but she wants you to marry someone from the family. And if that's going to count as a little bit of a Levirate marriage, we know that in Levirate marriages, the child that's born from Levirate marriage considered the deceased person, the widow's husband, then by her marrying in the family, whom is Ruth doing a favor for?
Her deceased son.
Her husband, right? The question is, who's more interested in preserving the memory of the husband? The mother-in-law? Or the daughter-in-law?
Naomi.
Yeah, right. Naomi.
It could be Naomi. After all, I mean, if losing a husband is devastating, losing a child, as unfortunately many know, is even more devastating. So she lost her child. So if she could replace the child in this mystical kind of way, that's even greater. So don't forget, in the last chapter, Ruth said, you know, I could go reaping with the boys. And she said, and Boaz will let me. So now what did Naomi say to her? It's great. Go reaping with the
girls.
The girls. So Ruth might have been thinking, you know, there's some burly guys out there. I think they might make a good shidduch. I'm kind of a poor immigrant. They're poor reapers. We'll make a great shidduch. And the mother-in-law says, no, go reap with the girls. I have other ideas for you. I have much bigger ideas. We have to ask ourselves, what would Ruth naturally want? Right? So when she says to her, after all, I have to find you a resting place that will be good for you, it's also good for whom?
Naomi.
So yeah. For the first time in my life, I considered the story, thanks to Yael Ziegler, a great author about Ruth, I consider this story in which Naomi is not really doing a pure act of chesed and kindness for her daughter-in-law by getting her married off to this old guy, but she's also, or maybe she really, is serving herself. Now you say, that's a little bit harsh against Naomi after all. Say, wait a second, what do we know about Naomi? One read of chapter one was she wanted the girls to go away so that when she came home, she wouldn't have to have these non-Jewish daughters-in-law getting in the way. Or these Moabites, or these enemy daughters-in-law. Maybe Moab is the enemy. Coming home with these enemy daughters-in-law. She thinks about whom? Who's Naomi think about, number one?
Herself.
Yes. Herself. So, again, the more generous reading is that what a wonderful mother-in-law. That's why it introduces her here as a mother-in-law. It is an appropriate role for the mother-in-law. It's a beautiful, kind role for a mother-in-law, not to want the daughter-in-law to forever be unmarried. She wants her to find somebody, and
I
she says.
I got into the class,
yeah.
But I'm muted.
You're good. You're good. No, you're not muted. You're good, Estelle.
I don't know.
You're good. So we have two readings of Naomi. Chaim Angel, the speaker we had here in the shul, said that there is ambiguity as to whether Naomi is this great person or just a regular person. There's also a theory that
Howard, you're up.
There's also a theory, Howard, I muted her. There's also a theory that that this book is not about heroes and villains. This book is actually about people just like you and me. When a relative comes off the boat from Europe, a lot of people say, you know, we want to help him, I'll send a check, but I don't really want him to plop himself in my living room. And that's Boaz. A lot of people think about themselves before they think about someone else. That's Naomi. There's a lot of very normal people here. We'll meet another one next week. So the book is a book, not of bad guys and good guys, but a lot of sort of mediocre people or just people who are normal people. And then we have certain heroes as well. So let's go back to the share screen and we shall continue. Again, you're welcome to unmute yourself anytime. I just, sometimes it's hard to hear. Okay. So let's look at those questions again. Who started the last chapter? Last chapter was started with initiation of Ruth, who wanted to go out and find some food. This chapter started with Naomi. What did Naomi say in the past about rest? She said the following. Let each one find rest, each one with their husband, Manoah. So what is she talking about here? She wants to find a husband. Who is this for? We talked about it. It's not clear. Is it for Naomi or is it for Ruth? What is the crisis now? Why does it have to be now? So the last verse of the last chapter said that Ruth reaped until the end of the barley harvest and at the end of the wheat harvest. And now both harvests are over. Why is that a crisis?
She's been there a while. They're established. She's had a chance. Everybody's had a chance to get to know her. And no kinship ties have come up where she'd have to get married.
Right. Right. So the her whole excuse to have a connection with Boaz is over. She can't glean anymore. There's nothing to glean. The harvest season is over. It's going to be the summer. It's going to be dry as a doorknob. So something must be done. There's a bit of a danger here. The whole season went by. You know, he went to the singles weekend. It's already Lava Malka. It's Saturday night at 1 o'clock in the morning at the singles weekend. And nobody asked you on a date yet. So then it's a crisis. So who is the hero? I think at this point, Naomi's the hero. She's going to make the shidduch. Let's see if that comes about. About whose problem is this book? Whose problem is this book? The problem, that's the question. Is it the problem that Ruth is not married? Is that the problem? Is it the problem Naomi's problem? And here, Naomi's taking the lead. She wants to solve. Whose problem is she trying to solve? Her own problem.
Her own problem. She wants to get married.
No, Naomi doesn't want to get married. Naomi's not talking about getting married.
No.
Maybe she is. Maybe she is. We'll see in a minute. Now let's continue.
If she's a feminist, I don't know.
Who is the greatest hero in this book? We'll continue to look at that question. Next. Atalo Boaz Modetanu. After all, and you know, Boaz is someone who we know him. Asher Ayid, now we're talking, you know, you were with his girls. Remember, the girls, not the boys. Hinehu Zoreh et Gorda Sorim Alela. He's going to be winnowing tonight. You know, I know the agricultural cycle. I'm Jewish. I've been here before. You're Moabite. You may not know it. But tonight he's going to winnow. And it's a big party when you winnow. And he's going to do the winnowing of the barley. I don't know why the barley. I thought they already had the barley harvest before. I'm not sure about that. But in any event, they're having the winnowing tonight. Okay. So why does Naomi reiterate the point about how Ruth was with the girls? The girls, right? She's reminding her, you're not here to marry the boys. You're here to marry this old guy. How do we know he's old? Because he always refers to Ruth as my daughter, which is not something a contemporary would say. And he refers to Boaz as my Adoni, my master, as if she's some kind of slave. Okay, what's the urgency? They're winnowing. The harvest is over. There's no gleaning anymore. She's got to get the shidduch done. And now, one of the key verses. V'rachatzt, you should wash yourself. V'sacht, you should anoint yourself with oil. People used a lot of oil in those days. They didn't have good shampoos. V'samt simotayich, you should put on your garments. There's a debate here between the way it's written and the way we read it as to whether it should be plural garments or one garment. You know, is it a skirt and a top or is it one big dress? And go down to the to the threshing floor. Now, if you look in the Hebrew, even if you're not good with the Hebrew, look at the brackets in the Hebrew. And you look at the parentheses in the English. It says v'yaradit or yaraditi. That last word on the letter on the left, T, that means I will go down. So according to one reading, it says, Naomi said, you anoint yourself, you know, take a bath, and then I will go down to the Goren. Wait. Naomi's not going to the threshing floor. Ruth is going. So in the way we read it, we say, you go down to the Goren. But the question is, why did the text, if you look in the Megillah itself, it says, I'm going to go down. Where's that slip of the tongue? Why is Naomi thinking, I'm going to go down to the Goren? I'm going to seduce Boaz. What's going on here?
Because she needs a husband at this point too.
Right. And to whom is Boaz the most appropriate age-wise?
Naomi.
She's the cousin, right? Her husband was a cousin. So, you know, she might think of him sort of romantically, but Ruth might not. Ruth thinks he's some old guy, right? So she's thinking, you know, this is what I would do. I would, you know, get dressed up, a little perfume, and, you know, go down, and or want to be more generous about it, you could say, she said, look, I'll go there. I'm going to be with you. I'm with you 100%. You know, you said you go wherever I go. I'm sending you to go, but I'm going to go with you, you know, in spirit, you know? So that's another way to read it. Al tivad de Eli Ish, don't let anybody know until he finishes eating and drinking. The question is, if she has to bathe, get spitzed up with oils, perhaps perfumes, and putting on special garments, is she suggesting a seduction?
Yes.
Seduction. Right. So yeah. Literally smells like it. Why not? So the question is, seduction? That's a very drastic move. Why not just ask him to take them and redeem the field? Why don't they say, hey, you know, we left a long time ago. Their husband left some fields and they were bought by other people. Maybe you could redeem it for us. You know, you're such a nice guy. You've been very generous with the wheat. Maybe you could redeem us.
Huh.
Right?
Wouldn't it be easier just to get married?
Right. So they're looking for redemption. It's just a simple question. They're looking for, in other words, they want to get the money from the fields. They want marriage. They want marriage. Well, the marriage, maybe you can't just propose. Maybe he'll say no. So you need a seduction to make the marriage, you know, it's a little smoother, to make sure he says yes.
That's been done before.
Right. And then we said, why should she wait until he is done eating and drinking?
He'll be sleepy and in the mood to relax.
Good mood. Why has Boaz not made the first move? And that's the question. That means the first move.
This he can't decide which woman he wants.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe he's thinking about Naomi. No, but he seems to show no interest in Naomi. He never says the word Naomi.
Okay.
Only in as much as she appreciates how much Ruth did for the mother-in-law.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
He was sitting Shiva, though, so I was still under the impression that time period hadn't ended and
okay.
Then that would be why he's not paying attention to anything.
The rabbis let Boaz off the hook. They say he lost his wife the day Naomi came home. So he's not in the mood. And now they're finally trying to get him back in the mood. Possibly. Okay. Again, it's a midrashic reading. Could be a midrashic reading just trying to give an explanation of why Boaz didn't do anything. But Boaz may not make the first move because he doesn't have a lot of initiative. He needs these women to take initiative. He's from the period of judges. There's a lack of leadership. He's one of them. He could be not making a move because it's not polite. He's too old to make an advance to this young lady. He's very polite. He told everyone not to touch her. He doesn't touch her either. Maybe he's worried about the Moabite status. Maybe he's still thinking, Moabite, not Moabite. But of course, Moabites are supposed to be inhospitable. And he already told Ruth that she was very hospitable. So he may be, you know, transforming his thinking about it.
But he may just like being single.
No. Right, there's a lot of us don't like that.
Some of us love it. It's not a bad gig.
Okay, the guy's 80 years old, but that doesn't make him dead.
There are some men, it's true, Suzanne points out, there are some men who need a lot of prodding to get married. They just, maybe he never got married. The rabbis assume he had a lot of children, but you could say that he, you know, he's one of these single guys who just, it takes a while. Now, what does this remind you of? So it reminds us of two other seductions where the women proposed to the men.
Noah?
You had the older and the younger. You had, remember, the daughters of Lot.
Yeah.
At Moab.
Yes.
And Ruth is from Moab. So we can't forget about that story. That's the story from which this comes. And the older one said to the younger, our father's old.
Yeah.
There's no man on the earth to consort with us in the way of the world. So come, let us make a father drink wine.
Yes.
Let us lie with him. We maintain life through our father. They also felt what? What was their feeling?
To continue the line.
Yeah, but how did they feel after everything was destroyed? What did they feel? There's no one on the earth.
Repopulate the earth.
But why did they have to use him?
He was the only guy around?
The guy. Desperation. Okay. So Naomi also feels it's desperate. The season's over. We got to take care of this. Also desperation. They advanced to him, and he drank wine, and he didn't know it was flying. So in that case, he did the act of kindness, so to speak, to populate the world, but he had no idea it was flying. The other case it reminds us of is the other seduction. Good. Is what?
Tamar.
Good. Tamar and Judah. She pretends she's a harlot. He's game for it. He sleeps with her, and they have twins, and one of them is the ancestor of Boaz. So both Boaz and Ruth have ancestors where the wife or the woman seduced the husband. One rabbi pointed out that the seduction of Lot, he didn't know it was flying. He was he was gone. He was plastered. Seduction of Judah, he was awake, but he didn't know who he was sleeping with. He thought she was someone else. And the seduction, perhaps, of Boaz, he knows exactly what he's doing. Let's continue.
He does.
Yes. So it could be a tikkun, a fixing of earlier seductions where the man didn't play a role. Moving along. Ahimashokbo, as he was sleeping. So Naomi goes on. As he's sleeping, or lying down, we're not sure if he was sleeping. Biadat, you should know the makomah sheyish kavshan. Figure out, be a spy, figure out where he's going to sleep. Uvat, and you should come. The gili maglotav, you uncover his legs. Maybe they had a blanket. Or maybe he had a toga. Mishachavt, and you will sleep. But again, the parentheses, I will sleep. And he will tell you what you will do. Oh. Now, how many words in that sentence are subjective? Suggestive, whether you know Hebrew or English, either way, which words are suggestive? Let me change.
Wine is suggestive.
What?
Lay.
Good. Lay.
Place. Feet.
The feet, possibly, yes. Feet can be a euphemism for other stuff.
Oh. He will tell you what to do.
Okay. We talked in the last chapter that Naomi says to Ruth, what did you do today? How did you do this to get all this wheat? What did you do to get the wheat? And she says, the person I did with today is Boaz. And we said there might have been a little underlying conversation there. And now she says, he will tell you what to do. There's all this asiya going on. Is it some sort of suggestive language? What else? There's one more word you didn't get.
Uncover.
Uncover, and then the word I just changed in the translation?
To know, right?
Viadat. Another one is to come. Not just in modern slang, but in Hebrew, if somebody comes unto a woman, it's an expression. So there are a lot of suggestive words here. And it's still Naomi talking. And she also says again, and I will sleep. Maybe a little slip of the tongue that she's thinking about this for herself. She's fantasizing about this for herself. Could be. or maybe just, you know, moral support. And Naomi's taking the lead, right? Naomi says, I'm in charge here. We're going to make this shidduch. Go get him, whatever. But then when you go down there, the plan is you go over here. And then when you get there, who's going to be in charge? He's going to be in charge.
Who?
We'll see if that plays out like that. Okay?
Right?
Now that's expecting a lot. This is Mr. Maybe never got married, never proposed to her, never brought them home, right? Never said anything to Naomi. You expect him to take the action, right? Unless Tahsin means what Suzanne and Shira were suggesting, that, you know, you go down, you lie at his feet, this old man, everything will happen. Huh. At that point, stuff will happen, and we won't have to worry about anything else. He's an honorable guy, so it'll be all right. If you know where I'm going.
This is okay. These are good people, yeah.
So this is Naomi's plan. Okay.
So he doesn't know who's with him?
There's no one there. She has to wait till he falls asleep, and there's no one there. These are his, it's his grain, so he's sleeping there, so no one will steal it. Okay, he did the winnowing. Some people say the winnowing is done at night. For whatever reason, they have good winds. And then he sleeps there to protect it from the robbers because it's very easy. Now he got ready-made wheat. I mean, the robbers could always come to the field, but now he worked so hard to winnow it, and now it's down to the grains. Everyone come to take a scoop and run home. So he slept there to protect it. Notice, he protects his property. And we'll talk about that. And to begin with, remember when he was looking at the field, he said, hey, supervisor, who's that woman? Which may have been a question of, you know, we don't want too many of these women around these parts. He may be very protective of his wealth.
See, was that wealthy people the Midrash that said
wealth?
Was that the Midrash that said that he was protecting his wheat? I thought it was like a party with his friends and he got drunk and just crashed.
No, he's the wheat.
Where he was.
You would have a party on the winnowing night. There may have been a party, like they have a shearing night. There's a big party. So there was a big party. And after the party was over, he slept there by himself because maybe he got drunk, but probably because he wanted to guard his wheat. That's a modern interpretation. Okay, moving along. So, Vatomer la kolcha tomi elias. Everything Ruth said to Naomi, everything you said, I will do. But again, we have two readings. We have the way it's read and the way it's spelled. It says, whatever you say to me, I will do. But it actually doesn't, it's not in the writing. If you look in the text, it just says, whatever you say, I will do. So there's some ambiguity as to whether she's going to do everything. You know, like I said, I'm going to say everything you said, not to me, but like to someone else. It could be a trick here. She says, whatever you said, not to me, I will do. So, in other words, you've always been a very dignified woman. I'm going to go with that. What you usually taught me. This seduction thing, I'm not going to do that. Anyway.
Okay. Are these people Ruth, human?
Right. Now, Ruth says, whatever you say, I'll do. Question. Is Ruth anxious about this? Who's anxious to get this done?
Naomi.
Ruth says, whatever you say, I'll do. After all, I said, wherever you go, I will go. So you want me to marry this person? I'll marry them. Maybe that's what she meant, right? She said, wherever you go, wherever you sleep, I will sleep. Meaning, wherever you want me to marry, I'll marry. So you want me to marry him? Okay, fine. She's not excited about it. She's accepting it. Moving along. Now, Terry to go in. So she goes down to the threshold, and she does everything her mother-in-law told her. Not yet. It could be a general statement of all that which is to come, or everything to get ready. You have to see when he's ready, when he's drinking, when he's finished eating, where he's sleeping. She did exactly what her mother-in-law told her. She commanded her. Yes. As Naomi suspected, he did eat. He did drink, probably wine. And there's another element that she didn't expect, but she may have expected it. His heart was good. He was feeling good about it. After all, he just finished the winnowing. He went to sleep at the corner of the pile. But Tavobalat, she comes stealthily, quietly, secretly. She uncovered his feet and she rested. She went down to sleep. So why is he happy? He's in a very physical mood, maybe about the grain. Is he about to be more spiritual? In other words, right now he's very physical. So Naomi's probably thinking, great, he's thinking physical. Let's get physical, and then maybe we can get a marriage going. You know, maybe some sort of force him into a marriage. Or are we going to see a spiritual transformation where he'll take this very physical night that he's having? He's protecting his grain. He's a guard. He's thinking about his money, his wealth. He ate and he drank, and he's also spiritual at the same time. Are we going to see a certain spiritual personality, typical Jew, who through the kugel and the chalent and all the good food, he's going to become spiritual? Or will he be seduced? Let's find out.
Do we know who he's with? Does he know who he's with?
Wait, that's the next verse.
Wait.
Ha'iba chatzi ha'layla. And it was in the middle of the night, the midnight, vayacharad ha'ish, the man trembled. Vayilafet, he sort of, I thought it meant he fainted, he pulled back. Vineisha, and behold, there's a woman. Shochevet rabotav, she's sleeping at his feet. Now, this language, and it was in the middle of the night, at midnight. Is that suggestive of anything you remember from the Bible?
It's dark.
It was dark. In the middle of the night. Sorry?
It came to pass at midnight.
What came to pass?
Everything
left,
in Egypt.
When we left Egypt.
Sort of. What happened at midnight? At midnight,
Eve was formed from Adam?
No. We left Egypt because what happened at midnight?
It was Passover. The angel of death passed over.
Right. The firstborn were smitten at midnight. Yeah. There's a whole song at the Seder night. So the author of this book says, maybe it was Samuel, he says, it was the middle of the night. This is going to be big. It's going to be like the Exodus. Something big is going to happen now. The Charad reminds us of another Jewish holiday. When did everyone tremble? Which biblical story?
Mount Sinai.
Correct. It's like Mount Sinai. Now, some say, Rabbi.
Was it midnight?
No, but there are two different images here. It's an image of firstborn. It's an image of Sinai. It's a very momentous verse and moment. But some people say it wasn't so momentous. You know why he woke up? She didn't wake him up. When he woke up, behold, she was at his feet. But the reason he trembled, maybe a simple thing. It was cold outside.
Yeah.
Says Yonatan, who's a great scholar at the Machon Herzog in Gush. He says, so you say, oh, it's just a month. He woke up, you know, because it's windy. No. At midnight, God woke him up. It was cold, and he woke up. He said he was shivering. He wakes up. Maybe she took the spread off his legs. Maybe he was getting cold. And because of that simple act of getting cold, the story unfolds. It's a divine act of a simple act. He had the chills. He had the chills, and therefore he woke up, and therefore the story will unfold, and the Mashiach will eventually be born.
Well,
moving along.
Could his mouth be dry from the alcohol?
Was he startled, or is he cold? How is language suggestive of another occasion? We mentioned Sinai and the Exodus.
He knew something.
Vayomer miat. And he says, who are you? Now he doesn't say BT. He can't tell if he's old or young. Who are you? Vatomer anochi. I am. She speaks very formally and forcefully. Ruth amatecha. Ruth, your servant. In modern Hebrew, modern English, your slave. Ufarasta nefecha al amatecha. And you should, and you will, or you should, or do, cast your coat, your wing over your handmaiden. Ki goel ata, for you are a redeemer.
Huh.
Now, there's a lot of things to say about this. Let's go in order. According to the plan, what was she supposed to do now?
Wait for him to tell her.
Right. You look beautiful, although the book never says she's beautiful. One of the few biblical characters was a major character. It doesn't say she was beautiful, but the rabbis say she was unbelievably gorgeous, but not in the text. Lost my train of thought here.
Wait for him to tell her what to do.
Right. So he said, you go down there, look pretty, and then, you know, something will happen. You don't have to, you know, to let the men take care of it. You don't have to propose or anything. But what does she do? She knows him better. Naomi hasn't seen him in years. She knows this guy. He's the most passive guy in the world. He's very nice. He has nice words. He's a good poet. But he's never going to do anything. So she says, I got to get to the punchline over here. You said to me that may God give you reward, that the God who you came under his wings, right? And I'm saying to you, hey, bud, what? Take me under your wings. Forget God. That's another thing. Sure, we want that too. But you have to take me under your human wings. So there's this, you know, this overlap of the human and the godly. And also she throws in this Goel thing, this thing from last week's Parsha, that you have to redeem land of your fellow. If Elimelech is your cousin, it could be a distant cousin, but he's a cousin. He fell on hard times, he sold his land, you got to buy it back. And you should, now, it could be that this image may be a complete proposal, marriage proposal. To spread your wings on someone may be a technical term for put your chuppah on me, right? This is not mincing any words. Or it could be more general. So here we see that this chapter sounded like it was starting different than last chapter. Last chapter started with Ruth's initiative. This chapter starts with Naomi's initiative. But it turns out that, and Ruth said you do everything her mother-in-law said. But it turns out we get to the key moment. Whose plan is it?
It sounds like Naomi's plan to me. I don't know.
He says, spread your wings on me. That was not part of the plan.
That was Ruth. Yeah, Ruth.
That was Ruth's idea. She proposed. She didn't let the man take the initiative. He's a man. He's dense. He's never going to get it. He doesn't know what he's doing. You got to give him a helping hand. Maybe he's too old. You got to help him out. So she's making her own plan. And the question is this a romantic? Don't forget. We were pretty well convinced, I think Charlie was definitely convinced, that the Naomi's plan was romantic, seduction. We're desperate. We got to do seduction. You know, just walking around flirting in the field didn't do it. You got to really nail this down. But Ruth's plan, when she starts talking, spreading wings and goel, what language is she speaking now?
Spirit of love.
Maybe a little more spirit. You could say it's loving. Think about that.
Spreading spiritual
wings. Could be more spirit, but it could also be going rejected. Back to his words about coming under God's wings. Says, well, I want to be in the your wings. You know, the marriage is a symbol of God, and you're the redeemer. That's a verse in the Bible. She says, said Leviticus, you have to redeem me. This ain't gonna be no love story now, me. I'm sorry to disappoint you. This is no love story. This is Leviticus here. You got to be the redeemer.
But of because course, Boaz, redeemer also, Boaz was her husband's. Cousin. So he needed to step up to the plate and do the family thing.
Right. So who's introducing the business element into this negotiation here?
Naomi.
No. Ruth. Ruth. Oh. So could be Ruth. The proverbial question, the $99,000 question about this book, is there a seduction? And also, is there any premarital, you know what? That question,
hopefully,
the answer could be as follows, that it shifts in the middle. We were headed towards a seduction, and in the middle of it all, we switched to a cerebral, spiritual, and legal discussion.
Well,
right? Yeah. He said to her, may God pay you back for all that you have done in the last chapter. God, under whose wings you have come, and she very cleverly alludes to something he said before and says, no, you spread your wings on me. Moving along. He asks her, who are you? Why is this significant?
Because who are you? Know.
Well, she's bringing up the part about redeeming kinsmen. And so at that point, now it's like let's get the lineage straight of why am I obligated on this? Who are
you? Well, one second. No. Let's not go that far. One second. It's the middle of the night. No one's supposed to be there. He's a crazy guy. He's very conscious of his money.
He's drunk and she's all fixed up.
Sorry?
He's drunk and she's all fixed up.
He's not drunk. He's just...
No. So, Suzanne, let's go with that. If he's an old man and he's a little bit drunk and he's half asleep and a woman comes to his feet, for most men, what would be the question? What is the question, who are you?
It could be, what are you doing here?
It depends on the man.
Right. So it could. Right. So right. So I agree with you. Me, I was like, well, what is this? What's going on with you? However, it could be like just a startle. I'm an honorable man. What's going on here? Who thinks they're going to seduce me over here? What's going on? Could be. Yael Ziegler wants to suggest something that I never thought of before. And that is, it's a whole part of a whole broader theory that we've started to suggest through Yael Ziegler, and we'll continue here. And that's as follows. Don't forget, when Boaz walks into a field, he insists that everybody say, Hashem Imachem, God be with you. And everyone responds, may God bless you. When you walk into the field, you talk to your reapers, you say, God bless you. They say, God bless you. In other words, what's his relationship with his workers? What kind of boss is he?
Good.
Because how does he treat them?
Kindly.
Like equals.
Like people. Like he recognizes. And she says to him in the last chapter, why do you, Laki Rainey, why do you recognize me? And everyone refers to her as Ruth the Moabite from Moab. And how does he says, Vayomer Boaz al Ruth. Boaz speaks to Ruth. Boaz sees people. When he talks to people, he doesn't see workers. He doesn't see poor people. He doesn't see strangers. He doesn't see enemies.
He gives people respect.
He gives people respect. So she shows up at his feet. Whether he wants to do something with her or not, first he wants to know, who am I talking to? This is not going to be a one-night stand. I don't know what's going on. First, I want to know, who are you? Smells good. It looks good. But the question is, who are you? So he wants to have a relationship. So she wants to say that this is Boaz's personality. And in fact, in the whole book, his whole role is to take these people who are dead and gone and could be ultimately forgotten, and he's going to bring them back. So what is he doing? In terms of what we're saying, what does he do? His whole role in this whole book is to what?
Also, Mason?
In the Levirate marriage, what does it do? What does it do to the deceased? It brings back their...
The soul?
There's a word in the Bible. Brings back
memory.
Their name.
Memory, name.
Yeah. The name. So if he wants to know, who are you? What's your name? And he refers to her as Ruth. The narrator says that he spoke to her as Ruth. And now he says, who are you? He's a man who's all about relationships. I don't know. I could be reading a lot too much into it. But there's something to that broader theory of the Yael Ziegler about the whole book. Moving along. Yael Ziegler claims that this is incredible. Here's a moment where he says, who cares who she is? It's the middle of the night. No one's looking. It sounds good. It feels warm against my skin. Let's get on with it. But he says no. He's a man of great repute. He wants to know, who is this? Who's seducing here? Who's proposing? What's going on? He's a man of high character. Now, when she says redeemer, does that imply that he has to do something?
I thought it implied that he at least had the obligation to acknowledge it. He didn't have to, but he at least had to consider it.
Well, I think one of the questions is, who's the closest relative? Because it seems to say in the last week's parsha that this should be the closer relative. But, yes.
Is it possible that because he is a spiritual man, he's trying to determine whether this woman trying to seduce him has got the same values he has?
Yes.
That he's trying to find, is she not only very pleasant from a physical point of view, but does she have a spiritual approach to things or compatibility mentally or morally or spiritually that matches his desire? And if you think of this as an extension of the Messiah to be, or the king to be, that will be the forefather of the Messiah. These are the qualities that he is searching for, whether it be conscious or subconsciously.
Very good. We're going to see that again later with another question that's similar to Boaz's question. And I like the suggestion as well. Mi'at could be, who are you? Meaning, more deeply speaking, who are you? And Ruth knew the right answer. Naomi may have thought the right answer is, oh, I'm here, honey. You know, that type of, you know, seductive language. She understood this is a man who speaks in high rhetoric. The right answer is high rhetoric, not any lovey-dovey stuff. And it's about my values that he appreciates, because he already told me. He never said anything about my looks or anything. He talks about my values, and it's excellent. I liked it very much. Also, don't forget that when he says that you are a redeemer, who's usually the redeemer?
Kohen. Kohen, Mashiach?
Hashem.
Hashem, correct. Hashem
Is the redeemer. Okay.
Dr. Lieberman, Hashem is the redeemer. So that's another case where in this book, we're not sure sometimes who's running the show. Is it God? Is it the people? Who's doing the actions? And don't forget that's the double entendre is double. It's a double entendre. She says, "Look, you want God to spread his wings? You spread the wings. You think God is the redeemer? You're the redeemer." And it's all true, because we as readers know, we're religious readers reading a religious book, that God is behind all the whole story. So he's behind the shidduch, and he's behind the redemption, and the goal of this book, to give away one possibility for next week's discussion, what's the point of this book? We're trying to find the redeemer, the Messiah, as Malcolm pointed out. So when she says you were the redeemer, she's giving a whole theological lesson. Don't wait for the Mashiach. You got to bring the Mashiach. You are the Mashiach.
The thing that I'm trying to get at is, you know, everybody doesn't understand that unless you do something, if you don't, you know, God helps those who help themselves.
Sounds like Abe Franklin.
But really, it's important. We want to emulate. Part of what we believe in is that if God was a creator, we've got to be creators. If God said people should rest, then you should rest. We're trying to follow the course. We're trying to carry out the desire. We're trying to create world peace. We're trying to bring where the lion will lie down with the lamb.
We try.
We never get there, but we can only keep aspiring to get there. So this is a very important part, and from my perspective, and I'm just a human soul trying to read into what's being said. So I see a lot of spirituality. I see a lot of meaning. And I personally find this a very valuable lesson and a very, very meaningful lesson, because it's dealing with an essence that's part of the Jewish soul.
Yes, I the notion that this book is not just a little love story, a cute love story, but it's actually about a philosophical question of, does God just redeem everything by himself, or does he expect human interaction and human effort? And if God is kindness, people say we read Ruth on Shavuot because the Torah is all about kindness. But guess what? God is kind and merciful. It's one of his major characteristics. But the point of this book is that we have to be kind. If we want to have redemption, if one Jew will be kind to another, we will have redemption. So the kindness is something that God has, but we expect humans to do it. Naomi brought that ambiguity out last week, because she said, God has, blessed is Boaz, who has, to God, who has not forgotten his kindness. Who didn't forget the kindness we asked last week? Boaz or God? And the answer is, the author wants us to be confused, because that's what this book is about. It's about the human hand in the divine redemption. So it's beautiful. Thank you. Now, What else? Vayomer, Bruchat Lashem Biti. He says, blessed are you to God. He's very big on words. Heitavt chasdecha acharon mi'arishon. Your last kindness was greater than your first kindness. Of course, the first kindness was to go with Naomi. What's the second kindness? Levilti lechet acharei habachurim im dalvi mashir. Not to go after the boys. Now, what was Naomi, Ruth was originally thinking of going after? The boys.
The boys.
But, and who convinced her not to?
Naomi.
Boaz and Naomi. And now he says, oh, Yishkoyach, you didn't follow the boys. You're looking for me. Maybe he expected that she would get desperate and marry someone during the harvest season. Maybe he was testing her, as Malcolm suggests, to see if she would say, look, I'm desperate. The season's over. Got to go with the harvest boys. They made a few bucks during the spring. Or would she wait for him? So he's very impressed that she waited for him. Also because the opposite of romance. You could have had a romantic relationship with one of the young boys who's appropriate for your age, but instead you're having a Levirate relationship with me. You're suggesting a Levirate relationship, which is all about keeping your husband and your father-in-law's name going. That's a very lofty thing. He might be saying something at the personal level, like, oh, you know, I'm an old guy. I didn't think you'd be interested in me, and that's so nice of you. That's how I often took this verse, as a sweet old man saying that he appreciates that she would look at him. However, he may be saying that I appreciate that you're interested not in a romantic marriage. You want a practical or a spiritual marriage. Marriage is about something spiritual. And to some degree, that's what, you know, good marriage is made of.
It's could I say something secular?
Yes.
About younger, beautiful women that marry older men with tons of money? That happens. Now, I'm not, okay, Ruth wasn't like that, but there are women that are.
Yeah. I have to.
But just because he called her daughter, he could have been 50 and she's 25.
He was 80, says my book.
Does it say an age?
How do they know how old he is?
The reason the rabbis say that since he disappears in the next chapter, he suddenly disappears. Since he disappears, it seems that he died. So if he died, he must be close to death. So that's where we get the idea that he's old. Now, Charlie's asking a legitimate question, and that is it really a kindness to marry a rich guy when you're so poor? Well, if you take the romantic part out of it, meaning you say you gave up a life of romance for a life with an old rich guy. But you're right, a lot of women are willing to do that, or some women are willing to do that, but she seems to have a very high character, so we don't necessarily suspect her of that.
Right.
Let's continue.
No, it can go either way, but not Ruth. Yes, she was good.
Right.
Maybe
now,
we
why is that turning to him a kindness? Sorry? Who are the kind ones in this book? So it looks like everybody engages in kindness, pretty much. Even Orpah did a little bit of kindness. By the way, Orpah, many people say, is also not a bad person. Orpah is normal. She went home to find a husband. As my machatenister pointed out, how did kindness revive people in this book? Kindness didn't just make people feel better in this book. It revived people. Who is revived, brought back to life in this book through kindness?
Naomi.
Naomi, for sure. And you know what? Who else?
Versailles.
Boaz, and perhaps the children who are being brought back spiritually, perhaps reincarnation, perhaps a special Levirate kind of a thing. A lot of people are bringing, when you give people kindness, you give them life. Take a person who's shut in their house for 9 weeks, and you knock on the door and you say hello, or you call them. We have to realize how much we can revive people just with that. Did Ruth want to go after the boys? Whose idea is this? So it's interesting, you know, Ruth is very dutiful, but how into this is she? One proof that she is into it is that she took initiative. She sealed the deal with those beautiful words that she spoke. And she has shifted the conversation from the seduction that her mother-in-law envisioned to something else that she envisioned. Ruth came up with this spiritual conversation, perhaps because she understood what's at stake and who she was, whom she was dealing with. Atabi Tial Tiri, Kol Asher Tomri Elai Esalach. Says, don't worry, I'll do everything you said. Everyone knows you're an Eshet Chayil. Some suggest that the story Eshet Chayil is an appropriate hymn and ode to her. What do we know about the Eshet Chayil that's similar to Ruth? What's Eshet Chayil? She's cooking and baking, and she's shopping, and she's weaving, and she's buying the field, and she's right.
Very industrious.
Industrious. What do we know about Ruth?
She's a very hard worker.
Hard worker. She works with, and she's buying the field. She's getting involved with the business. You gotta get the field back from my mother-in-law. So in many real scholars think that it's very possible, not just midrashically, but simply that the Eshet Chayil, the only person in Tanakh who's called Eshet Chayil, is Ruth. Hmm. And what is he called, by the way? When we met Boaz, you know what his name was? Ish Chayil.
Oh!
Gibor Chayil. So Eshet Chayil meets Gibor Chayil. She says, oh, you're such an Eshet Chayil. It takes one to know one. He's a Gibor Chayil. So we have a wonderful Shiva.
What's Gibor Chayil?
Gibor Chayil is it's a good question. Nobody knows what Eshet Chayil means. The Ramban suggested it means someone who knows how to organize stuff.
Uh-oh.
How has Ruth shown that?
She knew how to organize the grain and get this done and get this done, and she knew who, which religion she wanted, and she knew where to go, and she had
there are many managerial tasks involved here. Yes, correct.
And maybe she liked Boaz. Maybe she actually liked him.
Hopefully. Well, she definitely spoke very flowery language that he recognized her and all that. We don't know if why didn't Ruth take initiative about the food. Why didn't Ruth take initiative here? So it's an interesting question. I think it does, there's a certain ambiguity about that. But I think one thing's for sure. When she was asked to marry this guy, that's what she's doing, because she's loyal. That is her first charity, her first quality.
Right.
So everybody knows you're an Eshet Chayil. Very nice. So
I even know what Kiddush is.
Let's continue. V'atakhi omnam, but. It's true that I'm a redeemer. There's another redeemer who's closer. So now we've turned this romance into what?
A business train.
Right? This thing, we thought we were going to get some good entertainment over here, and all we got is people talking about some business, right? There's another redeemer. So he's also very honorable, right? Very honorable. There's a process, there's a procedure. There's a form, there's a formula. He's a man of rules. Don't touch this woman. Don't molest her. Don't talk to her. Let her take this. Right? He's you have to say hello to each other. And there are procedures and formulas. And he's kind of upset about the woman being at the threshing field in the middle of the night. He's not known for breaking rules. So leaning on Lila. So he says, stay here the night. Now, this is where, again, we get into the romantic question. Until now, it's been a very, very intellectual discussion. But then he says, sleep the night. A lot of people who are looking for action say that there's something going on here. But anyway, some people would say, no, he's very honorable. And firstly, he's so old, there's no suggestion this here anyway. And secondly, he's so honorable that he wouldn't want anyone to see her walking out. He has a plan for how she could sneak out. Now, in the morning, listen to these words. If somebody will redeem you, good. And if he doesn't want to, I'll redeem you. I swear to God, he says. Sleep here till the morning. So, on the one hand, it's, the hospitality we used to, stay here, sleep here, don't lose your sleep. But does this sound like he's interested in doing this thing, in making this deal, in having this marriage?
Yes.
Why? Yes, but he wants it to be really legal.
Okay, good.
Yes, because he likes her. If he didn't like her, he'd want her to go away.
Well, some people say, some people disagree. Can anyone see how you could read this that he's not that interested?
He's already looking for an option of I'm not the first in line.
Yeah. Also, does he seem upset if it doesn't go his way?
No.
He says it's good. Some people say the name of the man was good. But the simple reading is, he says good. If he redeems you, good. However, there is something that indicates that he does want this to go through. He says, Kol asher tomri lach eseh. Whatever you ask, I will do. I will do all on your behalf, whatever you ask. So how can he do that if the man is going to take over? How can he do it? But of course, Boaz knows something that we know about Boaz. He knows something about men in those days. They were all passive.
What?
The women were active. Devorah, Rechana. The men were passive. So if you ask someone to do something, he probably won't do it.
What?
Let me get this done by committee, which is a sure way to not get it done. So anyway, it's questionable.
Is this Congress?
Into a transaction? Is he passing the buck? Is he dispassionate about it? Is he honorable about it? Is he just doing the right thing? Does he expect the other fellow to not go through with it? And we'll learn next week that he's going to play a trick to make it unlikely that the fellow will do what he wants to do. Okay, going along. Okay. So this reminds us of Tamar, and you have the passage here from Tamar. So if it's not romantic, why is she staying the night?
Well, it could also be a safety thing. It's 2 in the morning.
Good.
That's not the best time to be walking along.
There is a midrash. There's a midrash that says that she was scared that she was going to be molested when she went there. She decided to change the order. She did her washing at the field. She didn't want to walk through the neighborhood looking all spiffed up. Good question. Good.
Oh,
he's all about her safety, right? He's all about making sure she's okay. So he's a very hospitable kind of a guy. It makes sense, right? Anyway, she slept at his feet. Suggestive, till the morning. And she gets up before anybody could see each other. And there's that word yakir again. Before someone can recognize their neighbor. Because according to Al Ziegler, the whole book is about recognizing your neighbor. And recognizing that people who are no longer with us need to be redeemed. And recognizing a woman who's a stranger. So before anyone could recognize each other, she got up. Which is a metaphor for the whole story. Before anybody was taking responsibility and being kind to each other, she was being kind. And she got up and did something. And he said, look, I don't want anybody to know anybody's here. And he said the following. Take this shmata, this handkerchief, this cloth that's on you. Maybe it's on your shoulder, I don't know, the scarf or a shmata on her head, a tichel. And hold it like this. And she held it. And he measured out six barleys. Six barleys? Six.
Now, measures.
Last time there were 10 measures. Is this 6 measures? You can't put 6 measures in a little handkerchief. Is it just 6 pieces of grain? What does it represent? Is this a symbol of marriage? Is this like a ring for, is this some ancient thing we're not familiar with? Rashi says it's the 6 qualities of the Mashiach. Ruach Hashem, like Malcolm was talking about. Ruach Hashem, Ruach Chochmah, Vina, Ruach Yitzhak. The Mashiach has to have a spirit of God, a spirit of wisdom, a spirit of good counsel. 6 spirits he has to have. It was allusion to that. Ibn Ezra even quotes a medrash. Ibn Ezra says, Ibn Ezra never quotes a medrash. But he says, look, I don't know why he gave her 6. I can't explain it. Maybe because she has 6 descendants who were really great. You have to figure, who are they? The medrash says it's Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, people in the book of Daniel, maybe obviously David and Solomon. Is it the other good kings like Hezekiah? You know, so it's interesting. So there's something going on with the 6. A lot of the mystics and the Kabbalists, all kinds of things about it. There's modern Zionism. There's a whole gematria relating to this. Anyway, a whole interesting thing. But it could be some sort of a symbol. So she comes to her mother-in-law. She says, who are you, my daughter? So what do you all think now? What is she asking? Who are you, my daughter?
Are you my daughter-in-law now, for real? Well, yeah. Right, she was her daughter-in-law to begin with. Are you married now?
Oh, okay. Yes, that's a good one.
Are you going to the mikvah?
Right. Now, even though she sent her to go, sort of go along with Malcolm, even though I sent you on this mission that was, you know,
locker room bit, boys.
A little bit, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Right.
Exactly. You know, it was a little shady. But are you still Ruth? You know, did something happen that would make you not Ruth anymore?
Oh.
Which is kind of funny because she's the one who sent her there with this whole scheme, the harebrained scheme. But she says, you know, who are you? Are you still, whose side are you on? Or maybe it was just very dark and she said, you know, what's going on? And she told her everything, asala ha'ish. Same word again. Everything the man did to her. Did to her? What's that?
Had done for her in this translation.
What?
It says in this translation on the screen, all the man had done for her.
Right.
Rather than what he did for her.
Is that another suggestive word again? But that word keeps coming up.
It could be. It could be. This is yeah. Better English than they use in Washington.
The question is Naomi happy with the outcome?
I think so.
Well, let's see.
She's not sure yet, but I think she will be.
So she said, and then Vatomer, and then she says, and then after telling him what happened, whatever she said, we don't know. And she said, these 6 grains he gave me. What do they symbolize? Maybe Ruth herself doesn't know. So she says, Ki amari lai, because he said to me, parentheses, he didn't really say it to me, but he said it to somebody, don't come home empty-handed to your mother-in-law. True or false?
True.
Well,
or is that her wedding ring? I don't know.
If she takes the wheat home, it's true. She was getting the wheat, and she wouldn't come home empty-handed. But did he say that?
He said, no.
I don't remember that.
No. I didn't say that.
He didn't say that. So Ruth is claiming something about the relationship between Boaz and Naomi, which Naomi was sort of hinting at some relationship. There seems to be none. But Ruth comes home and says, yeah, this is for you, Mom.
Oh, boy.
What is she doing?
Kind of patching the family tree back up?
Right. Some say she's serving as a bridge in the family. The family is falling apart. They think Naomi's no good. She went to foreign land. She let the boys marry foreign girls. Everything's no good. She doesn't want to talk. No one wants to talk to her. And he said, and Ruth says, oh, yeah, he was thinking about you. Maybe yes, maybe not. In any event, very interesting.
But Ruth really likes Naomi, it sounds like to me, from the beginning of the book.
Oh, it's unbelievable. In many ways, if there's any love story here.
The love story, yeah.
Love story between Ruth and Naomi. That's a love
yes.
story.
Yes.
No question about that. No question about that. But Tomish VBT, so she says to her, you stay here, my daughter, until you know what happens, because the man will not be quiet. He will not rest until things happen today. Very interesting. How does she know that Boaz will take care of it right away?
Because he's honorable. He's old and sick.
Yes. Good. He's honorable. Oh, good. He's old. He's old. He's got to take care of it right away. Good. According to Rashi, he's going to die any minute now. We better do it fast. And also because he's honorable. If he said it, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. So just to review some of the ideas, what kind of redemption is going to take place? It's a redemption that's more than just land.
Of the husband's name.
Of the name. Of name. And then eventually they're going to have David, and David's going to be the Mashiach. Right? So a lot of redemptions are going on. Who is the Redeemer? That question that Malcolm raised. Is this a book about God or a book about human kindness?
What's yes. the relationship?
Is there ambiguity in this book about God versus right. human? Right?
And respect. Well, humankind, kindness and respect.
That goes along with kindness a little.
Sorry, what did you say, Shira?
I said kindness and respect. And something I saw that said that Lot showed the angels kindness when they came into the city. And Ruth was his third generation.
Good.
And Tamar and Judah showed Tamar respect. Hmm. And so, and Boaz was eighth generation. So the union of
love and respect.
Ruth and Boaz was the kindness and respect.
Excellent. It's really that's an excellent ending to our class, because that's one of the things we were pointing out. Respect. That's what Yael Ziegler is saying, that he's a man who respects people. What does that mean? You're a person. You have a name. Who are you?
He treats everybody equally.
Treats everyone equally, even the stranger. And it's also about kindness. And kindness without respect is not really worth anything. If you give a dollar to a poor person, you say, here, bum, the rabbis say, you don't get a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah of kindness. The mitzvah is gone. You get zero. It all goes together. So is it a seduction? Well, Naomi may have thought so, but clearly Ruth took a left turn and went in a different direction. And she upheld the values. This tension, though, between should they go in the area of, in the realm of seduction or the realm of holiness, is going to be, of course, David's Achilles heel, won't it be?
Yeah.
But you can do both, can't you?
David did. Well, not.
I mean, if you. Well, what I mean is. That's another time. I'll give you a phone call at 3 a.m.
But you can't do both. But you can. But David was straddling between this question. So that ambiguity here may follow David all the way till David and Solomon and beyond. Is it a love story? A lot of people say it's not really a love story. It's a kindness story. And who is the hero? I think this chapter was ostensibly going to be Naomi's day in the sun, but it turned out to be Ruth's day in the sun.
Oh, I thought it was Boaz.
Structure. Well, next chapter. Well, that's another question.
I don't know.
Is Boaz the hero? Don't forget, it was Ruth who proposed. But yeah, he's gonna see to it that it gets done. We'll have to continue asking that question. Notice the parallelism of these two chapters. It starts off with the initiative of one of the women. They have a conversation between the two women. They go, and Boaz and Ruth have a conversation. Naomi and Ruth comes home, has a final conversation with Boaz. They're parallel. One case was started by one woman, in the other case, the other woman. But in both cases, it could be that Ruth is taking the key action. And so next week, we'll talk about what is the point of this book. And today, Suzanne and also Malcolm made some suggestions about what the point of this book might be. But we did see a very important thing, and that is that Ruth insists, both Ruth and Naomi understand that redemption requires human interaction. And let's comment on this. This is a very modern question. The anti-Zionists today believe that redemption takes place from God, period, end of report.
Yes.
All we do mitzvos, and the mitzvos, have a trickle effect for redemption. Whereas the Zionists believe, and many religious rabbis lined up with them, and still do, that redemption of the Jewish people is going to take human initiative. You have to have good leadership. The book of Judges is about bad leadership. And this book is also about men who were not leading. And it took the women in that period, a lot of famous women in the Judges period, to take initiative and do something. And then the redemption would start to happen. When women like Hannah and Ruth, Naomi took initiative, things started to happen. So it's very interesting. And this whole book seems to support this notion of religious Zionism, the idea that redemption is not something you sit around and wait for, but redemption is something that you can make it happen. And you, when you model kindness below, then the Kabbalists would say, kindness begins to trickle down from above as well. So that's our class for today. And I'll take any questions or comments at this time.
Rabbi, thank you very much. It was very informative and very, very interesting.
Thank you, and thank you for your comments. I enjoyed them as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Reb Joel.
Thank you. I'm loving this class.
This was
it's great.
A really great share.
It's an amazing book. It's just an amazing
book. Well, your comments were pretty amazing. Who has just got Yael Ziegler? He must be some sort of a rabbi.
A woman. She's married to a rabbi. An acquaintance of mine from Israel.
The Gush?
She's in the Gush Etzion. My yeshiva in Israel is a Talmudic yeshiva.
Yes.
And the head of the yeshiva will be speaking this Sunday at 11.
Did my brother-in-law go to that yeshiva?
your brother's son, your nephew went there.
My nephew?
Oh, yeah, I think your brother-in-law went there.
I think a Libra went there, didn't he?
Right. And they have
That's all the infants I got.
They have a branch for Tanakh and and education. And this woman is a teacher there at the
I'm glad I asked. Oh. Well, thank you so much, Reb Joel.
Okay, take care, Joel.
Really great share.
Rabbi, thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Very interesting take on the Book of Ruth.
Thank you very much.
Good night, one and all. Have a beautiful
evening. Thank you
very
much for all the effort you put into this.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's an exciting book.
Have a beautiful evening. And
Sherry Taylor's here too. Welcome to her. Elaine Fox. Good to have everybody with us.
Hello, Elaine.
Thank you all for joining us.
Hi, everybody.
Good to see you, Estelle. Good to see you. Bye-bye.
It's good to be seen.
Good to see everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amen. See you next week. See you Saturday night, everybody.
Saturday night. Okay. What about?